Hello, this is Jill Pasternak. Welcome to Crossover, the program that explores the universal language, music. Music of Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov, familiar to all, but not in the form of a vocal solo, which it really is. It's from The Tale of Tsar Tsultan, and we heard it sung in Russian by Corinne Winter, soprano, with Gennady Meyerson, pianist. We're having a grand old time here at AVA. I'm Jill Pasternak, sitting with some wonderful, wonderful musicians and singers. And we're going to talk a little bit about a program that has been instituted here by Gennady Meyerson. Tell us a little bit about you, Gennady. You're a graduate of the Curtis, right?
Thank you for inviting me. Yes, I'm a graduate of the Curtis Institute of Music, where I was a piano major and accompanying major. So I got involved in working with singers early on in my time at Curtis, and discovered that much of the Russian repertory wasn't as available to the singers. So I started to work in that area a little bit as a student. So I developed a kind of a guide for pronunciation. I was actually sitting on the third floor during the summer and typing on a typewriter. So we're going back a little bit.
A ways.
Yeah, going some ways back. So I put together a guide for pronunciation and started working with some singers. And it just evolved into kind of a direction that I took in terms of my musical activity. So going forward a little bit, I have been both at Curtis and the Academy of Vocal Arts approximately 22, 23 years,
yes,
doing kind of similar work.
But you've established a program here at AVA.
Let's talk about the Russian Opera Workshop. It's actually an independent program. It is not a part of AVA or any other institution. We happen to be guests at AVA. They were gracious enough to allow us to run the program here in the summer. I started the program last year. It was the first year. And the purpose of the program, I've always, as I said, for years, I've worked with the Opera Company in Philadelphia. I've worked with AVA and Curtis. Independent people just came to me for coaching. So I've constantly been doing the Russian repertoire and helping people. But some things came together. I don't know whether it's technology, and technology has a lot to do with it, because I could take and put scores on PDF and work, do the transliterations, translations, embed sound files for pronunciation. So I could give somebody a song and they can work on it by themselves and then come and meet with me and polish the song. So a lot of those things came together and decided, well, it's a good time to start a program. So last year was the first year, and the idea is that we give the singers an opportunity to have a Russian class every morning, where they both learn the pronunciation, but also a little conversational Russian, a little grammar, learning to read, just to get a basic idea of the language. Then we work on songs and opera, so we designate one opera per month. It's a two-month program. So last year, in June, We did Eugene Onegin by Tchaikovsky, and in July we did Iolanta by Tchaikovsky. So it's two operas, it's a lot of work, but the idea is that people that come to the program, they come by audition, by the way. People submit an application with YouTube. I really want to see people sing. There are those that come to the program that I know, so that's a different.
But it's rather interesting because one would say, well, why we don't have a special program for French or for Spanish? Russian is probably unique in itself. In the operatic repertoire, are there many, many operas that are sung in the original language?
Yes.
And I could ask Bill Stone, who is a great a performer in his own right and also teaches at AVA. Now, tell us a little bit, Bill, about your knowledge about Russian opera. I mean, in your many years of performance.
Well, unfortunately, when I was coming along, Russian opera was not done as often as it is now. Since the fall of the wall, the Iron Curtain, then the whole country has been able to expand and go all over the world. I was singing in Italy once in Salambo of Mussorgsky, and the singers came from Russia, and they sent so-called translators with me. I learned out later they were not translators at all. They were KGB that were trying to keep them from running away.
The good old times.
And Pata Burceladze, yeah, who was a very well-known singer at La Scala, and he was the bass in that opera. And I had never heard a voice like that in my life. It was an absolutely huge sound and beautiful voice, but they gave him no money, and he couldn't even go out and get something to eat. I bought him a pizza one time because they had kept him in the hotel, basically. But since that time, opera Russian opera has disseminated all over the world with Gergiev at the Met.
Sure. And Pata actually sang Boris Godunov here at OCP.
Yeah, yeah.
I was involved in that production too. But so that goes back again.
Yes.
You're right.
It just reflects on what has happened in the musical world, mm-hmm, as well, and repertoire, because after all, Rachmaninoff was around and Tchaikovsky was around,
right,
and all their works were around, but somehow they were translated into other languages,
right,
weren't,
mm-hmm,
they?
Yes. Well, there was an interesting thing, again, with the Salambo. I had worked with George Shevanovsky, who was a Russian and had sung at the Met.
Right.
He was very famous. He had been at the Met longer than anybody else, and he was 80-something when I worked with him. And when I got to Milan, where these concerts of the Salambo were, the so-called Russian translators were, one of the ladies, the KGB ladies, came up to me and she says, well, your Russian is very old sounding. And I said, well, I work with George Shevanovsky, who is Russian, and he's been at the Met for years. And she says, well, obviously he's not been in Russia for a long time, because he was pre-revolution.
Well, was it the language or the subject matter?
The language. the language, and just, the way the language had evolved.
Yes, yes.
And but anyway, that was that experience. And
There's another element I have to introduce, and that is that for many years, people that went to the opera, any language, any opera, they kind of had to prepare to know what people are singing about and read librettos, so there was a great deal of preparation. With advent of supertitles, and I think they started in Toronto, if I'm not mistaken, it freed up a lot of the repertory as well, and also introduce people to the opera in a bigger way, so people could, without preparation, go and benefit from the translation like going to a foreign movie, so that actually helped just the entire scene of the opera. But with Russian, in terms of
Well, it's a different alphabet as well.
Yeah, it's a different alphabet. It's a different exposure. If we're looking at singers that have been trained in opera, the main languages, you had Italian, really, primo, right?
Right.
And the French and German.
Yes.
So those are the three languages that receive most attention. Russian, it wasn't even part of some of the curriculum in some schools. You know, it's not even a requirement today. So what I do for all these years is a little bit kind of a foothold in these two institutions where we have it as a program.
But I want to say that what Ghana has made available now is really wonderful for all the young singers, because there's not been to this, you know, up until this program, there's not been the opportunity for young singers to go to a place, unless they went to Russia, I guess you could do it there,
right.
But to, in this country, to go to a place and actually learn Russian music with a Russian speaking coach, and in a situation where they can actually perform.
Or you could go to New York with all the emigres who were there from Russia.
Yeah, but that's true, but it's not. It's the focus.
Yes. I mean,
we have students that corner little emigres in their schools,
yes,
you know, in the hallways to learn a little Russian.
We just heard baritone Zachary Nelson performing Tomsky's Ballad from Tchaikovsky's Queen of Spades. Zachary Nelson has won many prizes over the last few years, most recently the first prize in the Puccini Foundation Vocal Competition, the George London Award in the George London Competition, first prize in the Liederkranz Competition, and first prize in the Opera Index Vocal Competition, among his many other awards. He is a resident artist at the Academy of Vocal Arts.
Now, we have a wonderful young artist here who's a student of William Stone and also a finalist in the Metropolitan Opera auditions and also with the Houston Grand Opera.
Yes, hello.
And his name is Nicholas Masters. And Nick, tell us a little bit about your experience with all of this.
Well, I was a student here at the Academy of Vocal Arts and worked with Ghana every year that we were here. AVA always does one concert that is all Russian repertoire, normally in the winter.
Yeah, we do it in December.
Right.
A little different this coming year, but that's separate.
And everyone in the school gets to participate and sing a piece in Russian. And I had always been interested in Russian repertoire. I'm a bass. There's a lot more opportunities for bass in for the bass voice and a lot of Russian repertoire. And so it was just perfect that I could work on Russian every year while I was here at AVA. And, you know, Ghana helped me polish several arias, which I still use to these days in auditions. And for me, it was just a good idea to be here this summer, to be part of the Russian Opera Workshop, to kind of hone my Russian skills and to get to work on two great new operas that aren't done very often. I mean, Aleko, which has very, very famous pieces in it, isn't done, really.
Yes, the Rachmaninoff, well, of course, it's the dances that we usually hear and we play symphonically. But I have a question to ask. I took a trip to Russia some years back, and I remember going into a church. There was a choir there. I had never heard a Russian basso like that. I mean, I've heard it, and I've heard about it. There is a quality. There is a timbre. There is a depth of sound that is absolutely totally different from a bass.
Yeah, I mean, I can only dream of making that sound.
What is the reason? What is the reason, Bruce?
I was singing with a Russian bass, and I asked him that question. I said, how do you make that sound?
It's unbelievable.
How do you do that? And we're on the radio, so you have to imagine what I'm saying. But he said, in America, he said, you sing through the mask, you know, which is sort of between your eyes. He said, you focus the sound there. And he said, in Russia, he said, we sing from the sternum, and we sing from the mask as well, and we join the two about 2 feet out. And he said, that's what we do. And it's just a different...
Well, it's deep. It's rising from the center of the earth. That's what it sounds like. And it is so vibrant.
And if you hear a Russian men's chorus, it's just thrilling.
It's unbelievable.
It's thrilling.
And I mean, as I say, we just stopped in one of the little churches. There was a choir there, and I just stood there transfixed.
Well, I think like Italy has tenors, Russia has basses.
We won't broadcast that.
We'll keep it between us.
Well, we may. So here we are, and I'm so delighted. Our audience is, of course, privy to come and hear these performances, isn't that right?
Yes, the performances are free to the public. At the end of each program, we put on full opera, and we perform three straight nights. So the upcoming performances of the Queen of Spades are on July 24th, 25th, and 26th at the Academy of Vocal Arts.
Now, it's a concert version, which means there's no orchestra. You have just piano, is that right?
Well, it's piano plus. There's a lot of notes in that transcription.
Piano plays like an orchestra.
Well, I didn't say that. You said that.
I did.
It's a very... Yes, but we use the piano.
It's only piano.
It's only piano.
Yeah, you know, as opposed to, we call it a concert version.
That's exactly what we
mean. It's a kind way of saying we just don't have an orchestra here, but of course it's very, very important because the piano is the full orchestra.
We've just heard Lilacs, a transcription by Sergei Rachmaninoff, performed by Gennady Meyerson, pianist.
Now, you have been here, Genna.
Genna, you can call
You speak perfect English. I mean, you really are marked. But you don't use the article all the time, which is typically Russian. In many cases, it's very interesting to see people who are just so fluent in English, and you really... All of a sudden, there is no article. It's a dropping of the article.
And that's
so
how
interesting.
We teach. Yeah, that's how we teach our singers to speak with a Russian accent.
So you speak
to
English
drop
with
all
a Russian
the prepositions and articles, and then they have a perfect Russian accent.
And they sing from
really,
the sternum, is that right?
Even during this program, I continue to teach how to do it.
Right? I invite the public listening to go to RussianOperaWorkshop.com and listen to the video, their video clips that Genna has with the students. And Nicholas, do you remember how you introduced yourself last year? That's really...
Oh, I don't know. I think we came up with... I was Nikolai Masterov.
We do a cute thing. Before each program, we basically make a short video. Everybody has what I call a Russianized name, you know. So it's based on their own name. So they create something cute. And everybody speaks with this made-up Russian accent. So
and it's, that, a, it's
you
fun.
Pointed out
it's
very
really fun.
Well.
Yeah.
Well, and you saying that the dropping of the article, we here in the workshop with our work on Russian language every morning, you learn that the reason why they drop the article is because they don't have it in Russian.
Yeah, we don't have it.
So
kind of implied,
that's why you find so many Russian immigrants or however. When they speak English, not...
And I've lived here a long time, and I still speak like that.
Well, right. No, but you have almost no accent. But the thing is that that's the Romance languages have the articles, I guess.
Right.
But Russia is a whole other world.
Well, and for young singers and for those of us who are interested in Russian repertoire, it's imperative that we become more familiar with the language, work on the Cyrillic. I mean, that's... half of the battle is that you're reading a language that's in an alphabet that is not your own. And so that's what's been great about daily instruction in Russian is that I'm now familiar enough with the Cyrillic alphabet that I can make a transliteration myself. And so that's, I think,
for any future work
right,
that you
it's,
do.
It's right. A big strength. You know, it's another arrow in my quiver of skills to bring to future work.
Can you read a Russian menu?
I could probably pronounce a Russian menu.
you could sing the Russian
menu. I may not be able to understand
every
word.
So in other words, you learn pronunciation, but what about translation?
Well, they're learning how to read, and they're getting a little bit of grammar instruction,
yeah.
Right? So all of that, in terms of translation, then they can, of course, reference
the sound.
Yeah.
Let me comment on. Genna said that because of the just the progress we've made in technology, that he's able to do what he does. One thing, and he mentioned it in passing, but one really important thing that he does is presents a score with the transliteration of the Russian above the entire score. The entire score he translates that way. Or transliterates that way.
Yeah, both.
As well as translates.
And then an English translation of word by word, and then this is the genius of Genna. He has embedded sound files, and they're these little icons, and you click on them, and you hear his pronouncing the entire opera.
So you can work on your computer in preparation. Clearly, that's just your first stage.
And you can actually learn how to speak the language. You could learn the language from his scores, and you would sound like you were from Tsarist Russia or something.
I was just going to say.
I give you the modernized version, the Soviet version. So.
Yeah. Well, I can only say that this is fascinating, and I feel so privileged to speak to you all. Can you give us a little example, for instance, at the piano and with
Nicholas,
absolutely. Would you like to? And
sure.
Perhaps, Bill, you want to sing a duet in some form?
Well, I would love to do that, but I've not
been
in the program.
Well, we can do something from Rachmaninoff, Faleko. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you tell.
This is the Zemfira's Father's aria. It comes at the beginning of the opera, and it's kind of a typically sad Russian aria. This old man is telling a story about how they're all gypsies in this opera, mm-hmm. And he tells the story about how he was in love with this woman Mariula, and they had a child. And one day they met another band of gypsies, and they camped with them for several days, and then the next morning the gypsies were gone, and Mariula was gone with them. Leaving me and my daughter Zemfira, who's one of the now central characters of the opera. And so it's an old tale of kind of love lost, and it gives a little bit of foreshadowing for the rest of the opera.
And the title of the aria is
Old Man's Tale.
Old Man's Tale. In Russian?
Rasskaz Starika.
Yeah, there we go.
Come on. быстро молодость моя. Звездой под очею мелькнула, остыли мне все деревы мира. Я лик навек у
We've just heard a performance by bass Nicholas Masters, who was a Met Opera finalist in 2011, is now with the Houston Grand Opera, and a student of William Stone and Gennady Meyerson at AVA and the Russian Opera Workshop participant. Nicholas Masters sang The Old Man's Tale from Aleko, an opera by Sergei Rachmaninoff, accompanied by Gennady Meyerson on the piano. A very important element in the study at the Russian Opera Workshop is working with a conductor as well as an accompanist. And to that end, David Hayes has been participating. Mr. Hayes, of course, is very well known as music director of the Philadelphia Singers. He's also staff conductor at Curtis and the Curtis Opera. And also in New York City, his music director of the Manis Orchestra at the Manis College of Music, which is part of the New School University. David, tell us a little bit about what you do and what your contribution is on this level.
Well, I'm basically running a, for lack of a better term, a masterclass for the participants. And what we're going to do is sort of work through large chunks of the opera. This is Tchaikovsky Pique Dame. And so it's a chance for me to do a little bit of work on an opera and a composer I love very much and have a fun afternoon and give the singers some perhaps alternate perspectives on things that they have worked on, since neither, you know, I've not worked with them and they've not worked with me. And so this will kind of be a good opportunity to practice their flexibility and likewise my flexibility in terms of sort of adjusting things on the fly, as they say.
Well, in other words, now this is a concert production, which means that there is no orchestra there, but there
Correct.
Is a piano accompaniment. But as you were saying when I spoke to you earlier, there really hasn't been any conducting going on, I suppose, in rehearsal.
Yeah, I think obviously the coaches, you know, are there to play, and they certainly give lots of feedback. I would assume mostly verbal. You know, there may be some small gestures made and everything, but there's no real what we describe as conducting going on.
In performance, when you get up there on the stage and normally have an orchestra with a conductor and you've got to sing the role, it's a very different experience.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing that, you know, with an orchestra, the conductor actually serves a particularly important service in an opera, because not only are you kind of the intermediary, so to speak, between the pit and the stage in terms of channeling and coordinating tempos and, you know, when someone needs a little bit of space here to finish a vocal line, et cetera, you know, they need a little bit extra breath here. You have to coordinate that sort of thing. Obviously, when it's just a single instrument accompanying, that's much easier to follow the singer. And there really is no need for someone per se to be conducting, because the communication between the piano accompaniment and the stage is immediate. So it does really change the dynamic when you actually have a conductor there, and it's more appropriate, obviously, when there is an orchestra.
But now, if you have a choral section there, I mean, that also changes with just a piano accompaniment.
Yeah, they have to, obviously, opera chorus is kind of a unique genre into mm-hmm. and of itself simply because there's always stage action that the chorus has to do. It, you know, occasionally they stand in big blocks and sing, but there's some characterization, there's stage action, everything. And so when you do have the chorus there, it probably would present for just a single accompanist a greater challenge, and maybe they might have to be a little bit more physical in their nodding or shoulder or something to give a cue or something. But it obviously, in the case of larger ensembles, it's always nice to have someone conducting. But it's, again, in this kind of situation for a concert production with piano in a very intimate house. So, again, we're not dealing with a large
right.
space. It's very doable and very possible. But obviously, the more people you get on stage, the more challenging it is to coordinate ensemble.
Yeah, I would think so, and I really think as an instrumentalist, I mean, when you're playing in ensemble, you've got to listen,
yeah.
and it's a different experience listening with your instrument on the same level than sitting on the stage and having, say, the instrument downstairs, you know,
yeah.
really on the floor of the auditorium. So I would imagine that that part is very important. But then when these people confront this role in an orchestral setting, then I guess what you have said to them, you know, is very, very important for them to absorb. I mean, is the relationship, again, with the conductor and the orchestra.
Yeah, the relationship in an opera between the singer and the conductor is ideally is a supportive relationship. Then that, you know, you know the singer knows that you are there for them to help them through any vocal difficulties that you're sensing or you may notice. If, like I said, if they need more time for a phrase or they need less time for a phrase, mm-hmm. sometimes you can sense when they need you to move things along a little bit. And so there's a real kind of bond between the singer and the conductor that allows the coordination of pit to stage to be something that is seamless. Now, obviously, you know, personalities being what they are, sometimes that's not always the case, and sometimes the relationship, rather than being collegial and supportive,
is
somewhat
yeah.
adversarial,
yeah.
shall we say, depending on the temperament of the artists involved. And I mean that both of conductors and of
sure.
singers. But really, I view the process as one that, you know, I want to make the singer as comfortable as possible so that they can do the very difficult job that they have on stage, and know that I'm there to support them and to help them, you know, put their best performance in front of the public. I mean,
you said something when we were chatting earlier about the Russian style of performance, which I would love you to explain that to our listeners. I mean, is it different from the English or French or Italian? I mean,
well,
what is that aside from the language?
I think aside from the language, and obviously for non-Slavic speakers, obviously the language represents a lot of sounds that we're not
don't
confronting
mean anything,
and don't really. You know, they're not the type of sounds that we use in our own languages or even the Romance languages. So there are some things that you have to get used to in terms of the language. Well, there are some interesting shadow vowels that come in Russian in particular that to an untrained ear may simply sound like a strange kind of
noise.
Well, I don't want to say noise, but it's probably the better way to say that is that it's a very quick combination. Like there's a it's sort of a schwa vowel and e. Those two vowels combined, but it's done very, very quickly. And it almost becomes one sound because it's done so quickly. But the combination of how you get quick is something that is really difficult, particularly, you know, I've worked on it myself. You know, Gena and I have worked together for many, many years, and I've learned a lot from him about Russian pronunciation and things. And it's a difficult combination to kind of really master in your mind, never mind actually producing the sound idiomatically. As opposed to something that's kind of, you know, sort of stilted in its pronunciation. Mm-hmm. So there are some unusual sounds.
Which every language has.
Which every language has.
And English, I think, for someone who's not English
English,
yeah. have terrible time.
Yeah, yeah. And people that don't actually
speak English trying
to sing in English, it's a terrible language
to deal with. It's terrible and very difficult.
Very hard. Very, very hard. So, you know, there's the issue of the language itself and everything. But I think, you know, like every national style, mm-hmm. whether you're dealing with a kind of the way you approach Verdi or Puccini and the assumptions that are made that maybe are not there in the score, but have developed through kind of years of careful tending through performance practice and things like that. There are things in every kind of national school where unless someone who's versed in that style is able to help you understand that here we do this kind of thing. You know,
style, of course, in every orchestral music as
absolutely.
Well.
Or absolutely.
Solemn, you know, instrumental music. But I think it's because the Slavic languages are relatively foreign to
yeah.
us, more than French and Italian. Well, French is very difficult, too.
French is horribly difficult
because
for Americans in particular.
For the nasal.
There are, again, some very strange,
mm-hmm.
odd sounds and combinations.
But to produce them is very hard.
It's very difficult.
Yeah, I do speak some French, and you just use a whole different part of your
yeah.
sound box here, or
yeah.
whatever it's called. But but this workshop really prepares the participants to just go out and do the role, I guess.
Yeah, I think the beauty of the workshop is that it really gives each of these singers a role under their belt, so to speak, in the original language, in a well coached in terms of its musical qualities, well coached in terms of its language qualities, and that is something that each of these singers can not only kind of, as I said, have a role under their belt, but it becomes a very marketable prospect when, say an opera company is doing a production and at the last minute somebody pulls out and the reaction is, oh my God, where are we going to find someone, A, that knows the role, B, that knows it in Russian?
Which is very hard.
Yeah, it actually narrows down the pool of possibility pretty well.
Now, you also are the music director, or actually staff conductor, for the Curtis Opera. Has any of this carried over for your, you know, work with the students at Curtis in any sense?
Well, I've been doing operas at Curtis for well over 20 years now, ever since I graduated, and I've done an enormous amount of work. I've actually, strangely enough, only done one piece in Russian during my time at Curtis. Not because they don't do Russian language things, but just because I haven't particularly been involved in that. But I do remember that I did a performance of Stravinsky's Les Noces, as we know it, most of the time.
That's difficult without,
which
the
is
language.
Not only difficult just musically and rhythmically and everything,
yeah.
but I had done Les Noces with the Philadelphia Singers in French, which quite often it is performed in. But these days, there is a kind of a movement to perform Les Noces in Russian.
My goodness, we'll have to change the name.
And the title
well.
Is Svadebka. So I ended up doing it actually at Curtis in Russian. So it was a chance for me to do some Russian work. There are only two places in the whole piece where the change of language causes a meter problem. There's only two spots, and in both cases it's a 5/8 meter, and the organization of the bar in 5/8 is a fast 5/8 is either 2+3 or 3+2 in terms of the beats.
Yes.
And the French version of it has to be 3+2.
Well, now what is it in Russian, Lenos?
The name.
It's the the marriage.
Svadebka. It means the same thing, the marriage.
Okay, so
or the wedding.
The wedding.
The wedding.
So Svadebka is three beats. I mean, Svadebka.
Yeah, it. I mean,
Nos is
just one.
Yeah.
But I had thought it would be many more instances where there would be the problems, but it actually is not related to the title. I can't remember exactly the phrase, but I have it actually clearly marked in the score.
But that's a good example.
But there are two spots where the French version, to get the correct stress of the word, has to be organized as 3+2, and the Russian word, to get the correct word stress, has to be organized as 2+3.
Isn't that interesting?
And it's just – it just depends on which language, the way you're organizing the metrical
So you're conducting – it's five beats
yeah.
to a measure.
So,
but,
well, two – you know, it's two
it's one,
lopsided
two,
beats.
And then 1, 2, 3 or whatever?
Well, no. It's actually either 1, 2, 1, 2, 3 or it's 1, 2, 3, 1, 2.
Yeah.
So it's one of those two variations. I mean, you conduct it in two.
Yeah.
But the question is, which is the longer beat and which is the shorter beat?
Right, right. Interesting.
And the language changes that choice because you have to get the language to line up. But I have done lots of Russian choral music with the Philadelphia Singers over the years. We've done Rachmaninoff, we've done Tchaikovsky, we've done Prokofiev, things that have required me to sort of get a better understanding of Russian sound and approach and things of that nature. So it may not be directly relatable to my opera work at Curtis.
Or the Philadelphia Singers.
Or the
but
Philadelphia
certainly
Singers.
Whatever you do, I guess, is helpful. And well, probably you have insights that you didn't have before either.
Yeah, every little piece of information sort of broadens the knowledge base, so to speak.
Well, and then you realize how much we all realize how little we know, and we think we really know, you know, a lot. But you certainly are. You're very busy here in Philadelphia. You're also busy in New York City. You're a music director of the Manis Orchestra at the Manis College of Music, and of course, that's a whole other part of your life.
It's a different hat in a different city.
So, well, it's just a joy to speak to you, and thank you for giving us your time. It's a whole new insight, I think, for everyone that is listening to what goes into production of an opera or of a performance in a different language and a language that we all consider rather difficult and strange to us.
Well, thank you very much for asking. It's a pleasure to speak to you.
Thank
always.
You, David. Just heard Margaret Mezzacapa, mezzo-soprano, and winner of the 2012 Metropolitan Opera National Council auditions, performing Field of the Dead from Prokofiev's Alexander Nevsky. Miss Mezzacapa is currently an ABA student. We've been speaking with David Hayes, music director of the Philadelphia Singers and staff conductor of the Curtis Symphony and Curtis Opera. We've also been speaking with, of course, Gena Meyerson, who is the founder and music director of the Russian Opera Workshop. Bass Nicholas Masters, who is the Metropolitan Opera finalist in 2011 and member of the Houston Grand Opera, and a student of William Stone and William Stone himself, who has sung extensively in the major opera houses of Europe. His North American opera engagements include the Metropolitan Opera, and title roles for over a decade at the New York City Opera. As a concert artist, Stone appeared with every major orchestra in the country. His long relationship with Robert Shaw resulted in acclaimed performances of the monumental choral works and over a dozen recordings. We listen now to a performance with Mr. Stone as soloist in Thus Saith the Lord from Handel's Messiah. Robert Shaw conducting the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra in a performance from 1987. Just heard a performance of Thus Saith the Lord from Handel's Messiah with William Stone, baritone, Robert Shaw conducting the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra in a recording made in 1987. Performances of The Queen of Spades are free and open to the public Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at AVA in Center City. For more information, go to RussianOperaWorkshop.com. We'll end with Daisies, music of Sergei Rachmaninoff, Opus 38, No. 3, performed by soprano Chloe Moore, a current AVA student, and Gennady Meyerson at the piano. I'm Jill Pasternak. Until next time.
For a second listen to selected crossover interviews, visit WRTI.org. Crossover was produced by Jill Pasternak in the studios of WRTI Philadelphia for the WRTI Radio Network. This is Joe Patti, Crossover's technical producer. Crossover is syndicated nationally by Global Media Group, Incorporated. Thanks for listening.